What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
We're taking it up a notch here for the 3 o'clock hour. Ted Johnson in the house, Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy, Stevens. Ted, how are we doing today?
I'm good, guys. I was listening to you guys yesterday. You guys did a tremendous job, I thought. And so I wanted to get in on this action, be a part of it. So I'm thrilled to be with you guys, and especially with our first guest out of the gate here at 3 o'clock.
I'll tell you who else is doing a tremendous job. The donations, the donors, the listeners, they are calling in. We're up to $3.824 million. As I said at the start of the show, we are shooting for $4 million before we go off the air at 6 p.m. You can call 877-738-1234. You can go online to the jimmyfund.org or kcancer. Text that to 56512. Every dollar matters.
I don't want to say, you know, hey, the Patriots are having a perfect season, or, you know, hey, you're pitching a no-hitter while we're in the dugout, but some little birdies may or may not have told me that the vibes are good right now, so much so, could be on our way to a record.
All right, let's shoot for a record.
Let's go. Let's keep going, people.
That's north of $4 million, but as Ted said, joining us now is a somewhat famous name, and you'll understand when I say his name why I say that. Kevin Tronkowski, that's T-R-O-N, but just like Gronkowski, 56, has rectal cancer. He's from Milford, New Hampshire. And Dr. Ben Schlechter, who he said it's Schlechter, right? Just like Hannibal Lecter when we asked him about his famous name. He's a medical oncologist from the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. So, Kevin, first of all, we appreciate you joining us.
Absolutely.
We won't hold it against you that you told us off air that you're an Eagles fan, a Philly guy.
Go Birds.
Eagles fly.
Well, to be fair, they're really good right now. Easy to root for.
This Milton Williams guy, like, did we get a good one?
Do you know anything about him? Do you have any intel on him?
Yeah. The $100 million dollar man.
Great.
Jeez. You got the best general manager in the business, though. I tell you, that guy can put a team together
and,
for sure. True.
And an owner who, you know, is native to the area as well. So
absolutely. He wanted the Pats, but he didn't get them, so he got the Birds.
Worked
out. Both teams worked out over the last 20 years or so. So, Kevin, tell us a little bit about your story, the beginning of your journey.
So the beginning of my journey goes way back to 2015, where I was having some issues and went in for my physical and let my general practitioner know. And they said, maybe we'll send you for a colonoscopy at 46. Went in for the colonoscopy. Everyone's laughing at the beginning. I wake up and people aren't laughing anymore. So I had a neoplasm that was possibly cancerous, turned out to be cancerous. And we, at that point, turned to, you know, come down to Dana-Farber and Brigham's and do what we could to treat it at that point. It was stage one and was surgically removed. And I had really good single-digit odds to not have a recurrence. In 2023, I went through all the procedures, all the colonoscopies, all the MRIs, all of that, basically timed out, right? And in 2023, had some more symptoms. Again, went to my general practitioner, and they said, you might want to go back down to see what's going on with this. I came back down. My surgeon found that there was possibly a tumor, some more tests, and Dr. Schlechter had to inform me that I had stage 4 colon cancer. So quickly after that, we went into chemotherapy for about 9 months. This is the beginning of 2024. And that did a pretty good job of holding things at bay. But like all chemos, you know, especially for colon cancers, it's an uphill battle. When Dr. Schlechter had, when I first saw Dr. Schlechter and he let me know, I didn't want to know the odds. I knew they weren't good. But I said, is there hope? And he said, yes, sure, there's hope. That hope kind of turned around, definitely kind of became more of a reality in early 2025 when he can tell you more about a clinical trial that was available to me if I qualified. A couple factors there, and I did qualify for it. Went through the procedure treatment in late April, early May, and results have been really positive so far. So currently I'm not on chemo, and I'm just living my life right now.
Can I ask you, Dr. Schlechter, we were talking before the show, seems to be a rise in colon cancer diagnoses, rectal cancer diagnoses, more so here, perhaps even on the telethon than before. Does this have something to do with the fact that we are getting screened, we're doing home tests, people are going to get colonoscopies more? Because I feel like gut health, which we know is just so integral to high-level functionality, has become a greater priority. And while it's very difficult, but also heartwarming to hear this story, Kevin, at the same time, it's great to know that people are actually taking care of their gut.
Yeah, so Kevin, sort of a lesson in everything that's going on in colon cancer in the past sort of 40 or 50 years, it's not just we have better tests and do more of them. Every year since 1970, everyone born after 1970, there's more colorectal cancer than there was a generation before.
There was, okay.
And there's every year that goes by, there's even more and even more and even more. And one of the consequences of that is that as of now, in 2025, the leading cause of cancer death in adults under the age of 50 in men is colorectal cancer.
Wow.
And by 2030, we're going to pass breast cancer in women. So colon cancer is changing. It's not just that we diagnose more with better tests, but people are getting more of them, and they're getting them younger. And so Kevin is part of this story where there's something out there, there's something going on where more people have colorectal cancer, younger and younger, younger. And it's not just all colon cancers. It's usually rectal cancers or cancers in the sort of the end of the colon. And the consequence of that's worse, because function is worse, right? We don't want people pooping in bags. We don't want people with teeny little rectums that don't function very well after surgery. And so we have more young people with a cancer that has a worse outcome. And that's exactly what sort of happened to Kevin in this story.
So wasn't the typical, I always thought, you know, I just turned 52 and something came up. I didn't get to go do my colonoscopy a few weeks ago. I've always heard, okay, 50. You know, 50 is the kind of the time you need to maybe start testing for that. And you're telling me that is too late. You should be getting it tested earlier than that.
Yeah, so we recently moved that number just in the last year or two from 50 to 45 because of this change, right? It's always been 50. It's been 50 for generations, and people 50 and older benefited from that screening. And so the group in the federal government that makes all this guidance moved that number back to 45, and that's an important change. We also have new tests. So colonoscopy is the sort of gold standard. It's a great test, but it's a lot of work to do a colonoscopy. You have to do all the prep the night before, which nobody wants more of.
It's a great time.
It's you know, nothing quite like sleeping on the floor of the bathroom. But there's now new tests, the sort of Cologuard, for lack of a better term, you poop in a box and you mail it in. This is an effective test, and you can do this. And so it means more people can get screened. And I imagine that we're going to be pushing those screening numbers back further and further and further, because if the test is easier and we can capture more young people, we can start to intercept these cancers. And that's part of the work that we're doing, is how do you intercept cancer? We're also doing work on how do you treat the cancers.
Yeah.
Because, you know, chemo's good. But as someone who is a researcher in cancer, I think we can do better than chemo. And that's not because chemo isn't good. In fact, chemo cures people. But we know that the immune system can fight cancer. We know that for some people, the immune system can be powerful in fighting cancer. There's Nobel Prizes over this. And what we discovered in Kevin using the sort of sophisticated DNA testing we have at Dana-Farber was a rare mutation called TP53R175H. If you have that one, you should come and check in with us about some trial options. And we were able to design an immune cell that is unique to Kevin's immune system and unique to his mutation, and give it to him as a single treatment, an intense treatment, a complicated treatment, a risky treatment, but it resulted in a dramatic injury to his cancer. And the blood marker that he had when we started this was 65, the CEA. That number should be like 3. And after that treatment, his CEA has plummeted down to 1.8.
Hell yeah.
So, and this is the first in human clinical trials, one of the first human beings to receive this agent. And this is pretty damn cool, because we have now a problem of young people getting rectal cancer. We're learning about the DNA that drives these things. And now we have a treatment based on the immune system, based on T cells, based on how we can design these things, that we can actually give it to a young guy we wouldn't have had that a generation ago.
So what I hear from you is the diagnoses are growing every year, more and more.
More and more. But and it's accelerating.
Accelerating, but there are also improving treatments, cutting-edge treatments. Those seem to come into what we're doing here today, and that's trying to raise money so you can research these things. You said something about a marker that you said it very quickly, like a smart professional would, went right over my head. But the reality is these dollars matter, I think, to someone like you more than almost anyone.
Yeah, really, actually, probably more to Kevin than even me. This is not cheap work, right? There are 30,000 genes in the genome, and so we have to check each of them in every patient. It also turns out that everyone's immune system is a little bit different, and so it's not as simple as you have the gene, we can do the immune therapy. You have to have the gene, and you have to have the right type of immune system, and this is profoundly labor-intensive work and profoundly expensive work. We are living in an era of crisis for science. We're living in an era where things are more expensive and there's less money to do work that saves lives, work that intercepts cancer. And so, yeah, people are alive today because of that investment in science. Kevin's alive today because of that investment in science.
Yeah. So, you know, cancer oftentimes, like certain diseases, loves to weaponize your immune system against you or shuts it down. Mm-hmm. And therefore now your best line of defense, your first line of defense has been turned off. So to hear that these dollars are going to help pioneer a treatment where a piece of your genetic code can then be used to turn your immune system back on and fight the cancer is incredible. Like, I hope years from now, people are going, you're coming in for a Tronkowski, huh? Like, that's, I mean, you could be literally that
Tronk
guy.
Spike.
Exactly, the Tronk spike. And I wanted to ask you, do you have any idea why there could be such an unfortunate rise in the cancers in younger people? Are we talking foods, environment? Yeah, the same
thing. How much time do you have? So there's
for this, we should have all the time in the world.
Yeah, there's things that we know, right? So we know it's an exposure that starts early because there's differences even starting in childhood. We know that adults who gain a lot of weight after adolescence are more likely to get it than those who don't. We know that children who have high sugar diets are more likely to have this than children who don't. And we know that the DNA profiles are slightly different, but not dramatically different, and that's changing over time. We also know that where it occurs in the colon is the drier part of the colon. So for just to be a little indelicate, your poop enters the right side of your colon as a liquid, and it's dry by the left side. It goes around and gets dried out so you can store it, and then you poop it out. And all of the increases in colorectal cancer in over in the dry side. So there's probably some substance that's partially soluble in water, and as you remove the water from your colon so you can store more stuff, you're concentrating whatever that is and kind of marinating the butt end of your colon and whatever these substances are, and there's probably many of them.
Kevin, before we let you go, I have to ask you about, because I think we have a shared passion, decorating.
I got to drive by his house.
Animation. As somebody who bought a 15-foot-tall decoration this year, a big blow-up that my wife didn't exactly love, what's the front yard look like? Where's
a couple of Griswolds here.
Yeah. It's not Griswold. I'm not allowed. My better half would not allow that. So it's very,
same.
It's very tactful, but it's if you watch that show around Christmas time about the light fight, it's a tactful version of that okay. with animation to music and using kind of all the things that I, you know, studied in college that I don't use anymore.
So like we're talking like you geek out watching those Trans-Siberian Orchestra videos with the lights going on all over the house.
You have that, right?
I have since I was...
I love that.
5-6 years old.
So when do we start the setup? How early?
It's already started 2 weeks ago. Was working on it last weekend, getting some floodlights going. Yeah, we'll go every weekend now, especially now that I'm feeling so much better.
That's the best part. And you guys are brothers from another mother. He wears Hey Dudes.
He's
as
got
well.
Hey Dudes. Yep. I feel a bond here.
Like this guy.
Other than the Eagles Patriots thing.
And lastly, another passion is you like to coach goalkeepers, huh?
I did. I definitely the cancer and the chemo kind of put me in the retirement phase. But for 15 years I was coaching at the high school level goalkeepers.
There's good soccer in this area, isn't there?
There's fantastic soccer in this area. Absolutely.
And cool. Just if you want to offer a quick word about how great the people at the Jimmy Fund at Dana-Farber have been to, because no matter how many people come in here and sing their praises, doctor, it'll never be enough.
Yeah, it truly is amazing. It's an amazing place from the people that are, doing the valet parking to, you know, the people doing the check-in, to the admins, to your PAs, to the study nurses who did incredible work for me fitting in this treatment around graduations and weddings, to the doctors, to the social workers, to the palliative care nurses. It just is an amazing place. Yeah.
That was well said, Kevin. We wish you good luck, not only with your recovery and your health, but also with the setup of the Christmas decorations. One of these days, I'm coming up to New Hampshire to check it out. And Dr. Schlechter, I have to thank you because I learned more in this 15 minutes than I have. You did a great job, I think, of kind of bringing it down to terms that I could understand, other than that one marker that just flew right over the top.
TP175.
TP53R175H. Give us a call.
Oh, great. Now you just gave everyone my Wi-Fi password.
All right. Thank you, guys. Really appreciate you stopping by. WEEI Afternoons rolls along, but we need your help. We're up to $3.824 million. Continue to give, please. We are shooting for $4 million. It is on the horizon. K-Cancer to 56512 877-3738-1234. We'll be back after this, but first, Dan Ball.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Has what's trending. WEEI Afternoons back here at Fenway Park for the 23rd annual WEEI Nesson Jimmy Fund Telethon, brought to you by Arbella. And we have a good news update from the tote board. We are up over $3.8 million. That is $3,869,895. We are heading toward our goal by the end of the show of $4 million. Help us out. You can text KCANCER to 56512. You can call 1-877-738-1234 or go online to jimmyfund.org. We talk to Alex Kaur every week, but this week for the Jimmy Fund Telethon, we have something special for you. So the Red Sox manager is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, the official supermarket of the Red Sox Radio Network, by Arbella, here for baseball fans, here for good, and by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains won't flow. Alex Cora and Joe Mazzulla sat down with our friend Megan Ottolini. She called it the Coach's Corner. They talked about their relationship together and their interesting perspectives on life as head coaches, championship coaches in Boston. So we give it away to Mego, Alex Cora, and Joe Mazzulla.
Welcome, everybody, to the WEEI Nesson Jimmy Fund Coaches Corner. We are so lucky today to be joined by manager Alex Cora and, of course, Celtics head coach Joe Mazzulla. So, guys, with the 23rd WEEI Nesson Jimmy Fund Telethon Radiothon, I just want to start out by asking you, and I'll start with you, Alex, since you're a many-year participant in this. What does the Jimmy Fund mean to you, and why is it important for you to be part of it?
I learned very quick how important it was, these 2 days in 2005 when I got traded to the Red Sox. I had no idea or a vague idea about the telethon. And then, you know, I was part of the Red Sox from 05 all the way to 08. And, you know, you just understand that you have to do your part, you know, from a kid that lost his dad when I was 13 to cancer, you know, that was eye opening, right? And life changing, and just gathering information and understanding what it means to the region. You know, those 2 days when I play, when I coach, there's no excuses, right? We our structure is so important, right? Especially in 162, we do everything the same, everything. I was talking to Joe yesterday. He asked me, what you do during the day? I get here at noon, meeting at 1:30, batting practice at 5, and then game at 7. And it doesn't matter, you know, like to do this now, it doesn't bother me. You know, you could tell me 9 a.m., 1 p.m., 5 o'clock, I'll do it, you know, because I got to do my part, and I love this 2 days here in Boston.
How about you, Joe? And how much have you learned about the Jimmy Fund? Obviously, you grew up in the region, so I'm assuming that you're aware of it. before you got into the world of Boston sports, but now that you're a part of this community in a professional sense?
Yeah, I mean, growing up in the region, you understand the importance of that and how it brings people together, but you really see just how the Jimmy Fund can have a positive impact on something negatively that affects so many people. And losing my dad to cancer as well during the pandemic, just having an understanding of the toll that can take just on one person, but on a family. And then to know that there's, you know, a fund out there, to know that there's people out there, to know the field of medicine that Boston has and that New England has, to know that there's so many people and so many events that are looking to flip that negative into a positive, and just knowing the impact that we can have on that is super important. But touches home to my heart, and stuff like this is important because you know that you can give back to people, and that's what I love to do most.
Thank you for sharing both of those personal experiences. Joe, you talked to family, and so many families come through Fenway in these 2 days and share their stories. What is the importance, do you think, that you, from your personal experience, want to impart and share out there about the support that these families need, in addition to the patients who are bravely fighting these battles against cancer day in, day out, but the support that Dana-Farber and the greater Boston medical community lends to these families, why that's so important?
Yeah, I mean, it's important to the patients initially, right? I think the love, the empathy, the understanding of kind of what they're going through and being there for them. But what you realize, and I realize it too, is as much as it impacts the patient, it impacts the people around them so much. And not just, it can be many different ways. It can be emotionally, it can be mentally, it can be physically, it can be financially. And so there's so many different ways that a person in a family can be impacted by something like this. And I just think it's our responsibility to help in every way, to help physically, to help mentally, to help emotionally, to help financially, spiritually, to try and help as much as we can in the many different areas that people are impacted by it.
So speaking of family, there's this greater family of Boston sports, and we got a glimpse of you two last night sharing some moments at Fenway Park. Saw some Celtics players. I believe Luka Garza, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Joe, was out there taking BP at Fenway. What do you gain? And I'll start with you, Joe, since you were there just last night. What do you gain? What do you learn from stepping into another coach's shoes or just seeing how they do things? We've also seen you out at training camp, for example, and vice versa, with Mike Vrabel visiting the Celtics practices. What do you learn from spending time with other teams?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes back to the foundation of the fund and cancer research and why we're here today is having an understanding and a perspective of what other people are going through and how to build connections. And I think regardless of if it's coaching, if it's medicine, if it's just life in general, we all use the same principles, we all use the same values, the same mindset to try to become better and to try to build relationships and build a community. So anytime you can step into environments where you can support someone that's going through what you're going through, you can learn from. I think we all have gifts and opportunities to make each other better. So just being there yesterday, you're able to connect to the city, you're able to connect to the players. Being with Alex, he's able to give me different perspectives. And so I think just building those connections, with people, I think is the most important thing. And really grateful that we have a city to where we could do that. You know, we've all been successful on and off the playing field. And I think it's our responsibility to share that and make each other better.
Yeah, Alex, have you gotten a chance during your time here, I'm assuming, to go out to different teams and spend time with different coaches? And why is that valuable to you?
Yeah, I've been with Joe. We went to the practice facility, I want to say, 2 years ago. Then they invited me to their coaching development, which is, I think, is outstanding. It's something that we probably going to adopt. I'm a big believer that, yeah, we're going to make our players better, but also we have to make our coaches and myself better. And we got to do it through the organization and obviously connecting with other organizations. For me, first of all, big fan of Joe, the way he goes about it, it's very similar to my situation in 2018, right? We come into a team that had big expectations, and the players did their job, but just being around him, being around Brad, I have learned a lot about connection. We have structured a few things in our environment based on what they do over there. And I'm very pleased to call Joe my friend and my partner, because what he's done the last 2 years with Brad is something that we want to do, right? And this year, you know, we are doing a good job. We still have 35 games. I call it 75 days, hopefully, right? And pull something big here in Boston. And, you know, some of the things that the principles that Joe has, you know, I have mirrored that and try to apply it in my arena.
Yeah, so you bring up a good point there, Alex, that both of you got your start at the professional level, you know, the pros here, the big four sports as head coaches in Boston. We're very lucky. We're very happy to have you both in those positions still. But I'll start with you there, Alex. How different do you think you are from your first year that you were in Boston as a head coach? How much have you changed?
More humble. I learned, you know what? I learned a lot in 2018. Yeah, it was a team that everybody, it was win or bust, right? Supposedly, right? And what we did in the regular season was amazing. And then in the playoff to beat New York, Houston, and LA, that was great. In 2019, I got the, you know, the humble experience, you know? I remember saying, we're going to run it back. We're going to do the same thing. This is, supposedly it's going to be easy, and it wasn't, you know. So I learned a lot. More mature, obviously, learned a lot in 2020 after the suspension. Came back in 21, and I have a different perspective, not only for the what we do, you know, the Red Sox and obviously the Celtics and the Patriots, but the city. You know, this is a city that has embraced us, you know, has adopted us. You know, we love it here. We won't live here in the off season. I promise you that. We'll go back to the island, go back to Puerto Rico. But I'm enjoying it now. You know, regardless of the results, I'm enjoying it. I can go and have, you know, conversations with fans and, you know, go with the family and have dinner, and people will come up to us and we don't have to be shy about it, right? We belong here, and I'm loving it. I'm loving it every second. I can tell you that whenever I get out here at noon, I'm ready to go to Fenway and enjoy the whole experience, because you never know what can happen in the future.
How about you, Joe? How different do you think you feel in the job now versus your first year? How much do you think you've changed?
I think even if you were to ask me this question 10, 12 years from now, that I changed, that you're always evolving, that you're always growing. And that's why I think it's important to have great relationships and great people like Alex, like the Red Sox. Like yesterday on a game day, for them to be as welcoming and teaching and insightful into how they go about doing their things was really special. And we get that in many different arenas in Boston. And so I hope that I'm always changing and evolving. And I think I'll always be a product of just the people around me. And like Alex said, when I take Sturo to go to the Garden every day, I try to take it all in, because it's a dream scenario. It's a dream job. And you don't know how long you're going to have it, but while you do have it, you got to make it better. And so I've been blessed to have a great staff ever since I've been here. Been blessed to have great players, been blessed to have great alignment between ownership and front office, which is a huge thing for success. And like Alex said, the community has taken me in, and you try to build that connection to where we all have the same mindset. And we all think the same way here in Boston and New England. And you know, you just hope that it leads to long-term success. So really grateful, and wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
So along with all of that, you guys have both won championships for this city, which fans will be endlessly grateful for. But I wonder, because it's Boston, because of the precedent that your own franchises have set with those championships, I'll start with you, Joe. After you win, how big is the pressure to win again? Or do you feel that there's a different kind of expectation in Boston that you'll win more than one, especially with a couple of stars or one group that you have in particular?
Yeah, I mean, I think before you even step into the expectation of the city or Boston or the organization, you have to have that for yourself. And so regardless of where I would be coaching, I would expect myself to want to win more. If not, then you should just kind of retire. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But at the end of the day, if we're going to keep going to keep coaching you and being around people, you have to have the standard and expectation to push yourself. That what you're doing isn't good enough, because there's more out there. So as long as you first have that expectation for yourself, for your family, for your players, your staff, your people, no one else can put more expectation than what you have on yourself. And then what the city brings is just it's an ownership and a responsibility. And I don't think there's anything cooler than waking up every day knowing that you have a responsibility to a city, to an organization, to move it forward, to leave it better than you found it. And you leave it better than you found it by going after winning for as long as you can. And so to me, I couldn't imagine being somewhere where you don't have that, because it brings the best out of you and it brings the best out of the people around you. And it builds a love and a connection that, you know, that we have.
What about you, Alex? You just talked to, 2019, maybe a little bit of a harsh lesson. Do you still feel that same pressure of, okay, got to go out, get another ring for the city?
I don't see it as pressure. I see it as a luxury. You know, I got my standards. And, you know, when I decided to be a manager in the big leagues, is to win as many rings as possible. How can we accomplish that? Like Joe said, you surround yourself with capable people, obviously players coming to play. You have to have good players too. But every day that I go out there, there's not a thought of like, we're not winning a World Series, you know. And we understand that this is a grind, it's 162 and this and that, but our expectations is to win it all every year. If not, like Joe said, you know, I can be home with the boys right now, you know, throwing them batting practice at 5 o'clock, you know, and try to make them World Series champs. But right now, my job is here. And I love it. One of the things, and we talked about it yesterday, the fan base, it means so much to us, not only personally, but for the group, you know. And I've been talking about it the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Fenway Park right now is very special. The Garden in the playoffs is very special. And I think, you know, they really don't understand how important they are. You know, the city, the fan base, the way they push us every single day, especially in our sport, you know. 162 is hard. It's very hard. And when we go out there, I remember as a player, I will go there a little bit tired. I didn't feel great physically. I will go out to run sprints at 6:45, and it energized me, you know, the fans and Fenway and all that. And that's happening right now. You can see our players. They go out there early. They start getting ready, and they get it. So, you know, we have a job to do, but without them, this is not possible.
So, Joe, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, because you're a Rhode Island guy. Jason Tatum was out in a community event a couple weeks ago, and I think he said it might have been like his first time in Rhode Island. So I want to ask how that's possible that you haven't gotten him down there before, and just a check-in on behalf of fans. We're all thinking about him, how well he's doing right now, and just his mindset going into this calendar year.
Yeah, I mean, he's doing well. Obviously, everybody saw that he's walking, so he's got great people around him. He has a great mindset of, regardless of, you know, the offseason is a time to get better, whether that's mentally, physically, emotionally, on the court, in the weight room. And so he's checking all the boxes, doing everything he can, you know, to get where he needs to get to. And I'll have to bring him to Federal Hill, you know, down there for dinner one time.
Any shout-out to any restaurant in particular you want to give out there?
Oh, no, I can't just pick one.
Can't just pick one. Okay. That's a very diplomatic answer. Well, thank you guys so much again. We really can't say enough how much we appreciate you joining in on the Jimmy Fund and giving your time here. Some really great insight from the unique Boston sports community and the fraternity of our coaches. Again, if you want to give to the Jimmy Fund, you can text to give any amount, K Cancer, to 56512, or call 877-738-1234 to make a donation. Thanks so much again, guys.
No, thank you. And again, like the people that are going through this, they're the real champions, and they show the real things that go into winning and competing. Because they're fighting for their lives.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
And the people around them are fighting for each other. And so those are the things that make the stuff that we do better. And I think that's important for people to know that. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, from my end, all the volunteers, everybody that is involved, thank you. You guys make us better and keep going. Let's go.
back here live at Fenway Park. Thank you to Megan Ottolini, Alex Cora, Joe Mazzulla. We are joined now by Ted Comenda, a melanoma patient from Falmouth, 54 years old, and his doctor, Dr. Beth Bookbinder from the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you for having us.
So, Ted, tell us a little bit about your diagnosis and your story. You just told us a little story off air that I want you to tell that I think is absolutely eye-opening.
Okay, so I was diagnosed in August of 2023. And well, first thing they kind of do is give you a surgery to take care of all the margins, try to get it all out. So you can interrupt me when I'm wrong.
But, got it.
So nevertheless, that surgeon said to me, he said, listen, if it was 10 years ago, I'd tell you to get a six-pack of beer, a carton of smokes, and go watch the sunset because you're done. And
10 years ago, not 50.
Ten years ago.
That's not very long ago. Wow.
So that's what all this research does, all these dollars do. They go to great things, and it's just it's amazing, really, what Dr. Bookbinder and her team have are accomplishing it on a day-to-day basis.
Ted, I gotta, how did you know something was wrong initially?
So I'm an idiot, but I had a thing growing out of my right arm that I thought was like a wart almost, really, right? It looked like that, or maybe a pimple, for lack of a better thing. So I ignored it, of course, and then I decided I'd use duct tape because that can pretty much fix everything. So I put that on there.
Oh, man.
Right?
That's something I would do.
WD-40 wasn't available?
Yeah, right. And I had it. But that didn't work. And at that point, my girlfriend was like, you need to get down and see a doctor.
So I read also you've done immunotherapy and also a vaccine that was in clinical trial or one of the first ones to test it out. What was your... What sort of hesitations did you have about doing some of these therapies? Because I'm sure you may have heard previously like, oh, you know, I have cancer. I probably maybe take some pills. It could be radiation, chemotherapy, and you're doing next level stuff. What was your willingness and hesitation about that?
Well, first of all, never go online and find out what you got. And look at
the internet is a scary place for a lot of reasons,
right.
Ted.
It's terrifying. And so I did that, and then I said, you know what, this is ridiculous. I'm in the best hands I can possibly be with Dr. Bookbinder. I said, whatever you think I should do, let's do it. And I'll defer to you from there, really.
Yeah. No, so he's on a great therapy. So what it is it's a combination of an immune therapy that basically boosts his immune system to hunt down any melanoma cells and attack them. But then in addition, he's on a vaccine. And what it is we've actually taken his tumor, figured out what's different about it. And so this vaccine is only for him, only for his tumor. And it's being given to actually guide the immune system and make it attack his tumor. And so he's getting those two therapies together.
Wow.
So yeah, it's what's called a personalized vaccine. It's only against his melanoma and being given with this therapy that boosts the immune system. So it's really incredible.
May I ask how high are the efficacy of treating that is, like when you're getting this personalized vaccine versus
maybe? Yeah, so it's still in trial. It's been really promising. There's already been one kind of trial readout that suggests that it really lowers the risk of recurrence by probably about 40%. So we'll see. The trial that Ted is on hopefully will read out even similar, if not better. So we're really hopeful that it'll show that it can really work against melanoma.
So what is the process like in terms of that science behind getting a patient and figuring out exactly what vaccine they need?
Yeah, it is incredible because they take the tumor, break it down, sequence it, figure out what's different about it from the normal cells in the body, figure out what the immune system might recognize. So not just what's different, but what the immune system might actually see as different. Then they create, and in this case, it's actually an mRNA vaccine. They build up these mRNA molecules that'll create that protein so that the immune system sees it and says, okay, I need to attack that. And it takes a while. It's actually not a super quick thing to develop this vaccine, but it's amazing. And there's many different vaccines that are in development right now, some mRNA, some what are called peptide, which is little pieces of protein. And it's super exciting science because it's actually, you know, one of the first like truly, truly personalized therapies where it's really just for one patient.
So that sounds very costly. It sounds very labor intensive, time intensive. I'm assuming that is why you at the Dana-Farber, the Jimmy Fund, need these funds to save lives like Ted.
Exactly. So we've got tons of immune therapies like the vaccines. We're now starting to do a lot of cellular therapies where we actually use immune cells, make them stronger, and then give them back to fight the cancer. And all of these therapies are, you know, require a lot of investment in terms of people, in terms of time, in terms of money. And so having funds that can really help support that is so important and so valuable. In addition, the funds also allow us to figure out who the best person to give these therapies are, so that we don't have, you know, we're not giving them to a ton of people at a high price that really won't benefit. So it's amazing what can be done with the money that we get.
How close do you think we are to seeing these vaccines kind of regularly curing cancer?
Yeah, I'm pretty hopeful, I've got to say. So I started in this field back in the days when I had a mentor who said, how can you go into melanoma? All your patients are going to die. And now more than half of my patients are living normal lives. And so if we can just figure out ways to make it even better for the other half and get them good cures, then it'll be amazing. I'll be out of business, which I can't wait to be.
Big Cape guy, Ted?
Pardon me, sir?
Cape Cod guy?
Yes, sir.
Excellent.
Yeah, I've been there about 50 years, really.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
The whole time. Yeah. And up in Falmouth, huh?
Yeah, well, Falmouth, Hyannis, Centerville areas. Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I love Cape Cod as well. Road race over the weekend. Sure. Crazy times.
It's unbelievable.
But I just wanted to give you a chance maybe to talk about how much it's meant to you to be in the hands of not only Dr. Bookbinder, but the experience you've had in Jimmy Fund, Dana-Farber, and how when you thought maybe for a second, like, that's it, there's no hope, versus like, hey, here you are carrying on enjoying Cape Cod life.
Sure, sure. So after I'd gotten to that sort of no hope experience online, you know, suddenly you go up to Boston, you meet Dr. Bookbinder. In my case, you meet the teams at Dana-Farber, and you suddenly feel relieved almost. I mean, I hate to say that, but relieved. First, you're terrified. I mean, terrified. Right? You're going to die, right? And then suddenly you're relieved. And you say, you know what? I now am in great hands, people that care, compassionate, empathetic, really want you to succeed, obviously, and it just, it's life-changing, for lack of a better term. Where you go from the worst feeling of your life to suddenly being like, all right, I can do this, and these guys are great at what they do, and they can get me to that finish line, to the road race analogy there.
And it has to help when not only do you know they have the knowledge, but Dr. Bookbinder clearly brings an energy, a confidence.
Right.
I mean, she basically said, I can't wait till I don't have a job. Like,
you're putting your faith
in that person. It seems easier.
100%, right? And you walk in there, everybody's smiling, everybody's upbeat, because they know. I mean, they have to know that people that are walking in there are terrified, really, right? Her and her team are amazing at that. And really, every floor I'm on at Dana-Farber, they're like that. It's just really great.
Doc, just real quick, is there something you would recommend, you know, if Ted identified or his girlfriend identified something? I mean, not putting duct tape on it maybe, but just go and get it checked. If there's something abnormal on you, go get it checked out.
If there's something abnormal on you, go get it checked. And I have to say, half the time it's the family that says, hey, that doesn't look so good. Why don't you get that checked out? And, you know, if a family member is worried about something, get it checked. It's, you know, your primary care. I know it's hard to get into dermatology sometimes, but just bring it to a doctor's attention, because
it's
better
not just
to get
moles.
It off when it's small.
But it's not just moles. It's like different things. Like,
right.
Look anyway. That doesn't seem like skin cancer to me. Oh, yeah, it is.
And you touched on it earlier, men. You said, you know, men are idiots. Yeah, men get duct tape. Men say, just wait, it'll go.
Right.
We're like that. I feel like men need that little reminder. Like, if it doesn't seem right, if you see something a little weird, go get it checked out.
And, yeah.
So we are
I
all.
I think regardless, people need to get it checked out. But yes, actually,
men can
more...
be stubborn.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You don't have to be nice. We're idiots. I believe you said idiot.
Idiots,
stubborn. We all fall under that category. So, Ted Commenda, Dr. Beth Bookbinder, we appreciate you guys stopping by.
Thanks for having us.
Boating? You got your own boat?
I don't have my own, but I have friends that have boats.
That is the best kind of boat. Yep. From what, unfortunately, I'm the friend with the boat,
okay,
so
perfect.
I pay for the gas.
I'll
bring the beer.
To you later.
All right, Ted, Dr. Bookbinder, appreciate
you
joining us.
Thank you, guys.
We'll be back here at Fenway Park. WEEI Afternoons rolling along. The 23rd annual WEEI Ness and Jimmy Fund Telethon.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.